You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski, who now works with ChildServe. He's the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children lead happier and healthier lives. I want to talk about this piece that I read in the Chicago Tribune. I know that I linked you to it, but I know it's, you know, in the course of a day. One, it's a pretty lengthy piece. They did a lot of investigative reporting on this. And if you go to the ChicagoTribune.com or if you go to my Facebook page, you can go to Patty V Show on Facebook, and I have a link to the article. And this is one of the most tragic things I've seen in a long time. There was a young man who was beaten to death by his caregiver because he was accused of stealing cookies. And there are individuals who have languished for, you know, days and weeks on end in their own feces, in their own dirty beds. They have bed sores. They are not being taken care of. There are others who have been sexually assaulted. There is a lot that we kind of turn our backs on. We go, well, these are group homes. It feels as though that's the cost of having institutions or group homes for people with disabilities. It's like every time it happens, we're like, oh, that's horrible. And then we don't do very much about it. I know when I met with Governor Quinn, you introduced me to him when I came down several years ago. He was talking about the legal actions that were taken, and they were trying to move away from institutions. But the problem being that those group homes don't have to have a nurse on staff because the population is only about 6 to 8 people in those homes. So they don't have they're not legally required to have a nurse. So if anyone is suffering or injured or having issues, they're not seen by a medical professional for possibly days, weeks, before something even gets worse. So, Senator Katowski, I know that you no longer work in Springfield, but I know that you're familiar with the struggle, the battle over budget, over funding. And when I posted this, I said, call your legislators, call Governor Rauner, tell them that this is unacceptable, because yesterday they vetoed spending $330 million to increase the pay for caregivers because many of these people are unqualified. And they also have 30% unemployment. There's 30% of those jobs go unfilled because people would rather go and work at a job that doesn't, it's grueling work. It's exhausting. It's important work. But $9.50 is not going to do it. How much are prison guards paid? And I know that I hate to make that comparison, but, you know, people want, you know, they want to have these very strict penalties for a lot of different crimes, and they will pay more for people to be incarcerated than they will to care for our most vulnerable. Right. And it makes me angry that more than 40 individuals have died over the last few years at the hands of caregivers.
Yeah, this is first of all, prison guards are paid considerably more money. And this is a couple thoughts that I have. This is this byproduct of the otherness of what has happened with our decisions in government. The otherness is like, well, these folks are over there. They're not a part of us. They're other.
They're not our problem.
Just even the definition of vulnerable. Well, that means, well, if you're not vulnerable, you're not a part of it.
Right. You're not contributing somehow.
You're not contributing.
You're not a taxpayer.
I don't really have to worry about you. If I don't have kids who are vulnerable, why would I worry? Why would I worry?
Right.
And the point is, but there was other decision the state made this decision to deinstitutionalize, take kids out of these larger residential settings and put them in group settings, but the money didn't follow it. The same way the money didn't follow it with the PUNS list. The money didn't follow the prioritization of urgency of need services and respite care for families who have kids who have developmental challenges and adults.
Right.
So one of these things, there's something, it hasn't penetrated, right? And what are the conditions which underlie these challenges and what causes us to get here?
Right.
And I think as long as people, I think what is, people have tried to say that here's 42 kids have died, right?
Right.
And people are like, well, no way that this could have possibly happened. But for some reason, we're not getting the response that we should. Like death and horrific treatment of individuals is not prompting people in positions of leadership to respond.
Right.
In the way that they should. And the question we have to ask ourselves is why? And I think, as I was talking to you on the break, it's like, well, all of these children and adults are connected to families. And all of these families are hardworking people. They peg taxes. They're making decisions at their kitchen tables every night to figure out ways how they're going to balance their budget and take care of their families for the future.
Right.
And all of these families are making decisions like, well, how am I going to take care of my child when they become an adult for the rest of life? And what happens when I, as a parent, passes away? And the discussion that we've been having is like on the otherness. It's about just the individual who's the vulnerable child or adult, and not about their families, and not about the community, and not about the overall societal impact. It's just about, and it should be enough, right? It should be enough that it's compelling that a child or an adult has lost their lives in one of those facilities. But for some reason, it's not penetrating. And I think it's because we're not engaging all the other aspects. Who's involved in that life?
Right.
And we have caregivers. We have these facilities that are run. We have parents, family members, aunts, uncles.
And the caregivers, this takes a toll on caregivers as well. The people who work there, you know, if 30% of the jobs are going unfilled, right, because the wage is not enough, wouldn't it stand to reason that if they raise the wage and could fill those 30% of those jobs, then you have more taxpayers? I mean, this seems like a work situation as well.
Well, let me tell you something. In my work, you know, we work with children who are at risk, children who suffer from abuse and neglect. And there's a very high turnover in our industry.
Right.
And it is the job that you're talking about, being caregivers for people who have developmental challenges and special needs, is that much more difficult.
Right.
It's that much more difficult. And I can tell you this, the people working in our group homes, and these are just like these group homes you're talking about for kids ages 12 to 17, it's a high burnout rate in the job.
Right.
It's a very challenging job. It's not a well-paid job. It is what people like literally call God's work. Because
right.
You're doing the work that is really looking out for people who have these challenges, that they should have a great quality
of
life.
And we should value the people who are doing the most noble work. And this is something that will continue. It's only going to grow because as we have a population of children who are diagnosed at a higher rate with autism, this is something, if we get in front of it now, I think is important. What do you say to people who worry that, well, or point to the idea that, well, you know, if they're going to have $330 million in additional wages for these caregivers, where's that money going to come from? Why is this a place that we won't spend more money on? But it's the kind of thing where we're not all suffering. People aren't feeling it yet, really. Not enough. It's not, like you said, it's not penetrating. We keep talking about how we don't have a budget, and yet people aren't, they're not up in arms about those who are really suffering.
Well, 'cause
we
talk a lot about outputs and not outcomes. We don't talk enough about, like, first of all, what's $330 million going to buy? And what happens if you don't make that investment? And if you don't make the investment, how much is it going to cost taxpayers? And how many people are going to end up in these long-term assisted living facilities? And how much are going to be paid for by Medicaid dollars?
Right.
And how much does it cost taxpayers every time somebody doesn't realize their potential, not live out a full life? And how much does it cost in healthcare? How much does it cost in other kinds of treatment? And how much does it cost in medication? How much does it cost? Whatever the thing. And there isn't enough thought process going into that. And people will say, and then I'll say to you, as someone who worked in the General Assembly, there are several hundred special use funds that are created by special interest groups that are protected.
There's like a salmon fund in Illinois.
There's standing balances of an excess of $1 billion that you can access these funds.
Right.
And you could draw from these funds and you can help children who are, you know, children and families. And that's the important thing. You can help children. You can help their families. You can help improve their quality of life. These are hardworking people. And if the government isn't going to be working for hardworking people and people, regardless of the challenge, whether it's you're trying to get your kid into college or if your kid has special needs, the government needs to be working for taxpayers. This is an example where the government has let people down. And it just has to stop and it has to end. And people just have to make a decision. You know, right now, my decision that I made, I was like, okay, I'm going to leave Springfield and I'm going to try and work directly with kids who are struggling. And I'm going to try and raise money from, you know, independent from private sources. I'm still going to be working in conjunction with the public sector to make sure it's as effectively as it possibly can be. But I thought, okay, in my universe, in 2,800 children and families, what can I do to make sure that life is better? But there are enough people down there in Springfield who get it, who really, truly understand. And they just need to figure out a way to step up and say, you know what, this isn't that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. What's a bigger deal if we don't do it and it costs so much more? And voters aren't dumb. People aren't dumb. And they'll put through the math. You're like, oh, you mean to tell me if you put $330 million that if you spend this, this is what it's for? Yeah. That is.
And to save lives, to improve the quality of the life that people are living in these group homes and their families. As you mentioned, I mean, this is also a drain on the economy when it comes to families who have to struggle, whether it's to try to pay for the services or the emotional toil that has this. I can't even begin to wrap my mind. As it is, the divorce rate for families who have a child with a disability is over 72%.
I thought it was like up to 80%.
I heard it was anywhere between 72 and 80, yeah. But I was go with a lower number because people seem to think, oh, that can't be. But you know what can't be? 42 individuals who have lost their lives in group homes at the hands of individuals who should have been helping them. More after